I'm very happy that general managers are considering the elimination of trade waivers and fiddling around with the trade deadline, John, because I have a mental block about trade waivers. And every year I get somebody saying, Jeff, can you explain how trade waivers work? And I say, no, I can't, because it's just, it's like I got Randy and Todd Hundley mixed up. I get Barry and Bobby Bonds mixed up. It's just a thing. And it was before I was old, too. This is back when I was young, like 40 years ago when I was 20, that I was getting this mixed up. So explain to us a little bit about what the general managers are talking about.
Well, Jeff, here's the key part, and as you're pointing out, this is exactly the dissonance that has existed in the game for a long time, because there's a difference between revocable trade waivers and irrevocable outright waivers. There's a difference between a claim being placed on a player during the waiver period and actually the player being acquired via a waiver claim. So there's a lot of different wonky nuances of this process that MLB is somewhat eager to do away with, because it makes for a more efficient roster management, and frankly it takes time. It takes time out of everybody's day to administer that process. It takes time from the commissioner's office, time from the executives' days, and so the belief is that if you make the trade deadline a uniform deadline of August 10th or August 15th, that you would have a clearer, cleaner process. You would probably have bigger trades, because you'd have an additional 10 days to do them, and you would, or 15 days, and you would know more about where your team sits at the time you make those moves. So all of those things are conducive to a little more activity and then a little less bureaucratic busy work every day, and I think that's probably the appeal. And of course it would be subject to approval by the players union. I don't anticipate that they would reject it on that level, just because I think for players, Jeff, as you know, it's confusing for them too. They hear if it's reported, of course the waiver process is supposed to be confidential, but in many cases it word gets out about the bigger players. I remember just Josh Donaldson this year, for example. What was his waiver status? That was a massive distraction, mm-hmm. I'm sure, for Josh, about when he was on waivers, when he was going to clear, what was going to happen, and you've got friends and family asking you if you've already been moved on to a different team. So I think a lot of players would say, you know what, I would rather do without that. Let's have one trade deadline. Let's have one day when I know this is when I could get traded, and if I'm not traded this day, I know I'm in good shape. So I think that's the appeal. And Jeff, I would say there's probably a pretty strong chance that at least MLB will vote to approve this change, and I would imagine the players would accept it as well.
Are we going to expect any discussion or any advancement or any resolution to some of the issues involving sign stealing and the use of technology, in-game technology, after what we saw in the postseason? And, you know, quite frankly, I mean, you know, look, I spoke to a couple of GMs during the season who talked about the Boston Red Sox, and, you know, they're convinced the Red Sox have, you know, 5 to 10 people in their clubhouse looking at video from every angle of every pitch and trying to come up with sequences.
Well, I think it's going to be discussed for sure, and this is really, today is the day when they'll begin different breakout sessions here at the meetings. And I think that'll be probably issue number one to really address that question. Now, it's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing entirely to actually come up with a rule to prevent it. And short of having a security or MLB official in the video rooms of the teams, as was the case during the last couple rounds of the playoffs, just after the Astros story broke, I'm not sure how MLB can really halt everything, because there, as long as there are cameras anywhere, there are going to be advantages sought by teams. Some of which are basically legal. Mm-hmm. Others, such as the Astros issue with the employee filming from the camera well, are not legal by baseball rules. So I think it's going to be discussed. But Jeff, I'm of the mind that it's really hard to put the toothpaste back in the tube right now based on the way that the game is so technologically advanced. I would advocate, I think, having that communication system between the pitcher and catcher to allow a little verbal communication about each pitch, that therefore you can go with no signs. But then again, how secure is that connection? How much concern is there of that getting hacked? So every time you have an innovation, you're worried about how it could be compromised. And with baseball, it's the technology about instant replay and the number of slow-mo cameras that are everywhere, especially for a national telecast when you've got even more cameras around. I don't know, Jeff, how much you could really change to do away with it. I think we're still going to find a certain amount of time that's now built into every game that teams and players are using to try to cover their tracks with signs, basically, and change up their signs and do other things to try to make it harder for signs to be stolen. And that all takes time. And so what this is all about is really two things: the integrity of the game and also the pace of the game, oddly enough. And both those things are at stake here, and MLB is going to talk about it. But Jeff, we can come up with a lot of ideas, but I'm not sure how actionable any of them are truly going to be in terms of making a meaningful dent in this very present issue for MLB right now.
John, one of the stories that really intrigues me this offseason is Brody Van Wagenen, the Mets general manager. Now, we know that part of the general manager's mantra is you have to have a lot of trust of the guy you're dealing with. And frankly, there's a lot of relationships that are built. Some guys trust other guys more than they trust other guys, which is just the way it is. Or some general managers trust other general managers more than other general managers. I've got to think Brody Van Wagenen has probably got a few notches in his belt, whether it's arbitration, free agent dealing, just sort of run-of-the-mill discussions with GMs. How much of an outsider is he at these meetings?
So it's a great question. I think that probably he still is one, and he'll have to earn the trust of the other GMs. And I also think in general that he has done a pretty good job over the years of working collaboratively with GMs and being respectful of their perspectives during free agent negotiations. I think he's always had a very good reputation in the game. And I saw him yesterday. He seemed very much at ease in this atmosphere. I saw him sit down with Joel Wolf, who is the principal agent at Wasserman, who has a lot of really prominent players now, and they were just chatting as they normally would, and it was a very pleasant conversation between two people that used to be competitors in the agent world, and now it's a GM talking to an agent. So I think Brody's his intellect and his ease with people, I think, will really aid in that transition. But to your question earlier, I was talking to a former GM yesterday who said that there were a handful of people that he just simply did not like dealing with in trades, and simply because of personality conflict or just differences of opinion or perceived slights, just simply didn't really like to talk to. So there are those divisions that exist in the game where certain GMs will talk with certain other GMs, and certain GMs will deal with agents, and some relationships are better than others. I do think, to your point, that Brody's going to have a learning curve, but he's been around the game long enough, and I think he's done enough good work on the agent side of the business that he does have a certain credibility that he's going to bring to this new adventure, even though I do think that there may be some GMs who wait a little bit as almost a period of initiation before fully embracing him in trade talks.
What are you expecting from the Blue Jays this offseason? We know, John, that they're not going to be players for any of the big free agents, but I've got to think that if the Cleveland Indians are serious about moving some of their veteran players, given the relationship between this front office and that front office, there has to be some tire kicking, at least, on Carlos Carrasco and people like that, doesn't there?
I think so, although I look at it, Jeff, and think that to get Carrasco or Kluber, you'd have to give up a pretty big part of your future. And I just see the Jays right now as being very careful with that. I think that the Jays right now are in a very much they're turning inward a little bit, which is fine. I think that's their approach to really build up that farm system, and so as a result, they may explore just because, as you say, of the relationship. But I don't see there being a very high chance of the Jays bringing in a major trade piece that's going to cost prospects. And I think that they'll be probably more active in the free agent market, maybe finding someone that they can sign if there's a palatable 3-year deal for them. Someone who I believe would have a lot of leadership qualities to help mentor younger staff, and that could even include a Jay Happ. I think that someone like Jay, a veteran pitcher who you know is not going to cost a bunch of years. They've already signed him once, so the relationship is there. I think he parted on good terms this year. I think the Jays did right by him to get him to the Yankees, and I think they handled that trade and that process with a lot of class. And so I think Jay's going to remember that. So I wouldn't rule out a possible return for Jay Happ to Toronto. I think he may have more lucrative options elsewhere. But for the Jays, Jeff, I just believe there's going to have to be a combination of on-field and off-field considerations in any move they make. And the off-field considerations are going to be, is this veteran player a leader who is going to help mentor a very, very young group? I think that was important in their decision to pick up Smoke's option. It is part of Kendrys Morales' value right now. And candidly, it'll be part of the conversation about what they decide to do with the likes of Russell Martin or Kevin Pillar, the veteran players around in this organization. Troy Tulowitzki is one more. It's the cost benefit and in terms of their time on the roster is going to be, are they helping or hindering the development of our young players? Because the development of the young players for the Jays right now, Jeff, that is the single most important thing they're doing right now. It is not trying to win the World Series in 2019. I know it's hard to say, but that's the reality. They're trying to develop their young group, and I think every move is going to be viewed through that prism. Does this help us get our young players closer to being a championship core? If the answer is yes, they'll consider it. If the answer is no, they won't.
John, we're going to let you scoot. Enjoy Carlsbad. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Jeff. I know it's been a busy hockey news morning, and you were on it, covering it great as always, my friend. So I'm eager to get plugged back into the hockey world once I get home from here.